It's the Space Game Junkie Podcast?
Yeah.
Is that what we'll call it?
Yeah, simple.
Okay, so that's cool. This is the show. It's real. It was that easy. Did you feel the transition from the practice to the... Yeah. So anyway, you're Brian Rubin.
I'm Brian Rubin.
And I'm Jim Hunt. And you're in L.A. and I'm in Raleigh.
Oh,
and,
okay, cool.
Yeah, so we're both fans of spacey games.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was thinking, like, podcast is a long time coming. Like, you needed to be doing this.
You know, I thought about it on and off for a while, but I could never, you know, think of... Because I didn't want it to be just me. That's, like, dumb. It's like,
yeah.
It's like, it would be like one of those old newsreel things, you know, to all the ladies of the world and all the ships at sea, you know, it'd be like that kind of static, stupid thing. So I never, like, I thought about it. I'm like, I don't know who I'm going to talk to the whole time. I mean, I could do interviews, but that's on a podcast. And then when you asked me the other day, I was like, oh, yeah. All right. Why not?
Yeah.
I've known you I've known you online for a while, at least a couple years now, at least, from the various forums and crap that we hang out on. And we've always had good discussions about this sort of thing. So when you asked me, I was like, I thought about it for a second. I was like, yeah, sure. It seems natural. Like, none of the other space sites are doing this. So I thought that's kind of cool. And I like to hear myself talk. I could just talk forever. So, yeah, no, it was a good idea, man. I appreciate it. And I think we could really do something with this once we, you know, have an actual format. Because this is kind of like our first, this is kind of our first shindig. So it's kind of like, woo, hi, everybody. Episode zero, like the intro.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, the intro thing just to get us through the Appleness. All right, so we'll get approved, and we'll probably just drop this one, you know, once we get it approved or whatever, and we'll replace this with, like, a for-real episode. But since people might actually hear this...
I think we should keep this one. I think this should be, like, episode zero, the introduction. You know?
Yeah, it'll be like the text scroll, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is...
We need to play the theme music and just... But people couldn't see it, like the Star Wars text scroll.
Exactly. Like, people, we need to, like, warn people, I think.
Yeah.
So that's what this is. This is the warning. This is the shot heard around the world. This is the warning.
So you've been playing TIE Fighter. You're doing a Let's Play thing of that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I never thought to do Let's Play videos. And then my friend Brian requested that I do one for Rules of Engagement 2. And I'm like, I'll do it when I get to it. You know, when I get to the list. When I get to 1993 on the list, I'll do it.
Then. Yeah, wait a minute. So Rules of Engagement, isn't that old Interstellar title?
Omnitrend, actually.
Omnitrend. Because I just remember it was like a Star Trek-looking L-Cars, and it was all like orange and green buttons. And
Yep.
And, that game, I still have the headache that game gave me.
Well, Brian was going through his games, and he actually had a boxed copy of it, and he sent it to me. So I was I have to do this now. I have to, you know, as a way to kind of pay him back for his generosity, I actually have to do this. So I started doing those, and that was a lot of fun. So once I started doing those, people were like, do this, do that. And, like, I got more than one request for TIE Fighter. And so I was like, you know what? This is a wonderful game. It'll get people talking, and it certainly has.
Yeah.
And it'll be fun to revisit. It'll be like a journey. Like, I haven't played this in so long. Let's see how I do. And wow, I didn't do well at first. I'm getting a little better with dealing with the A-wings and a goddamn assault gunboat. Oh, I hate those things so much.
So you're pretty far in, though.
No,
you're back at the beginning with the.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't get the gunboat for quite some time. The gunboat, not the missile boat.
No, the missile boat is in the expansion, Defenders of the Empire. No, I'm at the beginning, man. I'm like four or five missions into the Battle for Hoth, which is the first battle, quote-unquote battle. They don't call them campaigns, they call them battles. So I'm just getting started. There's going to be at least 50, 60 videos out of this once I'm done.
Oh, wow. Oh. I hope you have the endurance.
Oh, it's TIE Fighter, man. I mean,
so what are you recording with? Because you had some issues. Two questions in this. First off, did you have trouble getting the game to run, period? And then second, the struggle to actually record it because it's in DOSBox, right?
Yeah, so I'm using.
Weren't able to use Fraps or anything.
I use Fraps to record the Rules of Engagement stuff, so I didn't think there'd be a problem with DOSBox. It had no problem with that game, but the issue with Fraps is that whenever I turned the recording on, it slowed the game down to a crawl.
Yeah,
it was like 2 frames a second. I couldn't do a darn thing. It was terrible. So on 2:45, I asked for some either tips on maybe how to get Fraps working better or maybe some alternatives. So a couple people suggested some free alternatives. A gentleman named Armando recommended this one called, I believe it's Open Broadcaster Software. And it's a free cross-platform thingy, and it just went into beta, actually. But it can either stream to like Twitch TV type things, or it could record to your hard drive. So I did a test run with that in DOSBox, and it's beautiful. Like, no slowdown whatsoever. It records right to MP4 files. Like, Fraps was recording in AVI files, so I had to use, like, Windows Movie Maker to convert them to a smaller format. But this records right to MP4 files, which you can then just upload to YouTube easily. So, yeah, I believe it's called Open Broadcaster Software, and I can include a link. I should write that down.
Okay, yeah, we'll put that in the show notes.
Show notes, that's a post. That's the post for the show.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so OBS link. I have a very old keyboard. I don't know if you can hear that. It's an actual IBM Model 10.
Oh, wow.
Old school. Yeah, because I love the clickiness of it.
I used to have one of those, and then something got funky with it. But anyway, so I ended up replacing it because I do love a Microswitch keyboard. I replaced it with one of the DOS keyboards.
Oh, wow.
The DAS, yeah. Nice keyboard. The problem is that my wife has it banned from the office because it's super loud. And whenever I'm gaming on it, you know, it's like click, 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 and it makes her nuts. So, yeah.
My girlfriend who lives with me now, she moved in late last year, she's adapted to it. But I actually have three of these things because I was using one at work when I had a PC there, but it doesn't really work well with a Mac, sadly. So, but I have two backups now plus this one, so I have three of these things because, yeah, other keyboards are mushy. But
yeah, I need the clicky if I'm coding or I'm writing an article or something.
Especially
I need the clicky because that's like serious business is happening here. I've got my clicky keyboard.
It's so great with the writing. I think it really does help me write better.
Yeah. Well, our first computers, whenever I was in high school, like a lot of the other schools, they all got Apple IIe's, and I was kind of jealous of that because they could game on them. But we, our school got IBM PCs, the original 8086 or whatever those were. So those are awesome. And then, of course, they had the Model 10 keyboard or whatever they were.
Model M, I think.
Model M, yeah. Yes. So it was like that was my first exposure was that. And hey, what was your first computer, by the way?
Well, my first computer was a Radio Shit. Excuse the language. There's going to be language in here. We might as well just mention that because I do curse like a sailor. I can't stop it. It's the Philly in me, as my girlfriend says. But the first computer was a Radio Shack TRS-80. It was a little color one, so it hooked up to.
Oh, is it Coco?
Yeah, I think so. It was like the size of a paperback, the size of a hardbound book. And it hooked right up to, like, the TV. That was the monitor. And it ran basic. And the first games I ever got on that thing was, like, a cassette tape from a specialized drive. And that's when I first played Lunar Lander. That was, like, technically really my first space game was Lunar Lander. But then when I got serious, I got a Tandy 1000 EX.
Mm-hmm.
And that was...
Which is basically a PC.
Basically, but it was, like, an integrated unit. It had... like DOS and this little office suite built into it, plus a hard...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like Deskmate, I think it was called, plus a floppy drive. And with,
did it have a color screen? Or
yeah,
it
no, it was
one?
It was EGA, I believe, but it had a three-channel speaker, so it could actually have some, like, generic music, more than the bleeps and bloops of the PC. But, my first game with that was Starflight. And
cool.
I got that because it had a cool spaceship on the cover. And I had no idea what I was in for. I had no idea how much that game would change my life. It really totally changed my life.
Awesome.
What was the first space game you played?
Parsec. on a TI-99/4A.
Wow, I never played that. There was like...
As far as the computer game goes. I mean, there was a lot of arcade stuff and console stuff in that.
Yeah, I mean, of course, Space Invaders, I played all that, of course. But, I mean, the computer stuff, that's where the real meat comes in.
Like, yeah. Well, I think you and I, being about the same age, right?
Yeah.
So I think we had a similar arcade experience of like, the arcade games were there about the time that we were tall enough to stand on a milk carton and hit the button.
Yeah, I mean, I think we, like, we're both in our early 40s. I think we grew up at an amazing time when this stuff was really coming. Like, we were kids, you had the first Pong machine, and then you had the Atari, and then you had the Vectrex, and then you had the arcades coming into their own with all the late 70s and early 80s games. And I think that just really, I think we got born into a sweet spot of technology and gaming that I think really is just helped us be like amazing game fans. Like I don't think anyone born today will, I mean, they'll take it for granted. You know, you have the iPads, you have the iPods, you have the iPhones, you have consoles. We didn't have that.
I saw an article today in Canada. They ruled in the courts because they had somebody, they put him in jail, and of course you get your one phone call, right, to call your lawyer. But the kid's like, how am I supposed to find a lawyer on this thing, right? I need a computer. I can't find a lawyer without the internet. So now it's the law, apparently, that they have to give you internet access. That has replaced the I get my one phone call when I go to jail.
Oh, my God.
So we're there. Like, nobody knows how to actually find information just with a telephone anymore. It's like, who the hell am I going to call? You know,
I'll be honest.
Which is true.
It's true. I mean, I don't remember phone numbers anymore. Why? I mean, you know what's? I don't even know my girlfriend's number. I think I know maybe the first three digits. That's it. But yeah, I mean, I just remember like when I was using DOSBox before I found that front end. We'll put that in the show notes too. The front end I'm using.
Yeah, that was quite nice, actually.
Isn't it?
Some stuff that I couldn't find otherwise.
DOSBox Game Launcher, I believe it's called. It's the Java one. Oh, it's so nice. It's just all the options are right there, easy to set up and everything. You can have different little settings for each game. It's great.
Yep.
Oh, it's fabulous. But,
well, that's a thing that we ought to talk about, like in the next episode. We can go into depth on how to get some of these games working, because like TIE Fighter, well, with you're running it in DOSBox, but it's the TIE Fighter Collector's CD, the DOS one, not the Windows 95 Collector's Edition.
Did I tell you why I'm using the DOS one?
Yeah, because the iMuse.
Yes. Yes, that's the main reason. I mean, I could have used the Windows 95 one, but that Redbook audio, man, just kills it for me.
Yeah, and it makes the image ginormous, right? Because it's like, why do I need a 600 meg CD-ROM? Or yeah, this is like 600 megs of this CD-ROM. Oh, well, it's all music, you know, because the game is just this little. But and what blows my mind, though, is the one that was on floppies, they still had the voices in it.
Did they?
Like, how the heck did they do that? Yeah, like some of the voices, not all of it. Yeah. Like the each individual mission wasn't completely narrated, but they still had some digital voices in it.
Really?
And it was just like, how the heck did they do that?
See, yeah. It's weird. By the time I got TIE Fighter, I kind of got late, I'll admit. I never had the floppy version, I don't think. I went straight to the CD version.
That was, there was Doom, right? I started with the TI. And then I bought an Atari 800, and I had the Atari 800, and of course, that was during the era of, like, oh, yeah, I've got an Atari. Well, you have a Commodore, which means you're, like, a substandard human being, right? Because Ataris rule and whatever, you know, so it was that. I don't know. Like, kids now have no idea about that whole, like, my computer's better than your computer culture, because now everything's a PC.
Right, right? Yeah.
So, you know, but whatever. But anyway, so I had that, and then it was the hard decision, do I get an Atari ST or do I get an Amiga? And I ended up getting the Amiga because it had better games, right? So I had an Amiga 500 for quite some time, and then finally couldn't hold out any longer, and I had to jump over to the PC. Now, PC games really sucked because the graphics were kind of nasty back in the CGA days, even the EGA.
Yeah, compared to Amiga, I mean, it wasn't until the late 80s where we started getting VGA and SVGA.
Yeah, exactly. And, so it was like, I don't know, it was the early 90s, like 92, 93, I think, is whenever I finally had, and it was Doom that pushed me over the edge. It was just like, I'd seen Wolfenstein and stuff, but it was still a little bit too primitive. Like, my Amiga could still outdo that. And then Doom was out, and I was just like, oh, man, well, there's that. And then the stuff started coming out, like, what was the Secret Weapons of the Luftwaffe?
Oh, such a great game, yes.
Yeah, so it was like that, Secret Weapons of the Luftwaffe, M1 Tank Platoon.
Oh, yeah, I still have that. You know, I still have a copy of that.
Yeah, and all the flight sims started to just really kick ass, and it was just like, I got to be over there on that. And it was just, finally, I just couldn't take it anymore, right? So I had to get a 486. But the first two games that I bought for the 486 was X-Wing and TIE Fighter.
There you go. Now, I think I'm misremembering, because I'll be honest. Remember I just said I'd never had the floppy drive version of... I think I did, because I played the demo, and I was blown away by the demo. But it's weird. I have very few gaming memories. I don't have any memory of playing the floppy version, just the disc version.
I don't know. There wasn't a whole big gap between either, though, because CDs were just coming out. And, God, do you remember all the horrid full-motion video?
Oh, sure. Gosh. Remember The Horde with Kirk Cameron? Probably one of the worst examples of that whole thing.
But that was a good game, though.
Was it?
That was a fun game.
Really?
Yeah. It was, because you were like they gave you a little medieval town. It was a village, right, that had just a couple buildings and a pumpkin patch, and then the goblins would come invade. So you had, like, so many minutes to run around and buy traps and set traps up and stuff. You know what it was? It was a damn tower defense game. That's exactly what it was, and that genre didn't really come into its own until the whole touch tablet interface stuff, because that's like the number one type of game that's on the iPads today is tower defense stuff, which is like RTSs for people that can't micromanage a bunch of units, right? You just build towers and then let it happen. But, yeah, it was basically you would set up your tower defense, and then you'd have your one guy that could run around and patch holes and whack monsters with a sword. And then, you know, like you'd survive the night, and then the next day you'd rebuild your defenses and stuff. Yeah, it was a kind of cool game. Spiritual grandfather to Orcs Must Die.
See, you going back to what you said earlier, I do enjoy Orcs Must Die. I've always started playing that. But Secret Weapons of the Luftwaffe, wasn't that the same folks who eventually did TIE Fighter and X-Wing?
I believe so. It was Totally Games, wasn't it?
Oh, hang on. I'm at Moby Games because I love them so much. Let's see. Secret Weapons of the Luftwaffe, 1991.
It was Larry Holland, wasn't it?
Oh, but they called it Lucasfilm Games at the time. But yeah, it was still Lawrence Holland. See, that's what I was getting confused, because before he was at Totally Games doing like Secret doing like TIE Fighter and stuff, they were doing Secret Weapons of the Luftwaffe, and they were doing the Battle of Britain, and these great flight sims that were just fantastic.
Yeah. Yep, and then you had Spectrum Holobyte with Falcon. Gosh, who made it was those guys too that did Flight of the Intruder. I really liked that game.
That was Spectrum Holobyte. Yes, that was.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I really liked Flight of the Intruder. That's when flight sims were accessible enough.
Yeah.
Yet real enough. It's like I didn't really want like the current crop of games that's out there with A10 and that. I really want to play that game. However, I don't have time to go to college how to play that game.
It's not a game. That's the problem. It's not a game.
it's like I want an appreciation for what the workload for the pilot is. I don't want to actually replicate the workload down to the individual switchology.
See,
you know, and it's like when I was in the Army, I was a helicopter mechanic.
Oh, really?
I sat in the cockpit of Apaches. I worked on them every day. I know what those switches do. I don't want to do that in my leisure time.
Right.
You know? So it's just kind of like, let me just hit E to start the engine and G to lift the landing gear, and we're good.
I think the last ones that got it right was Rowan Software. Remember those guys? They did the...
Rowan... Oh, I don't know, man. I'm a little bit bruised with Rowan, because there was something about their games. They were always, like, almost there. They were, like, 80% games, where it was, like, 80% there, 20% bugs and weirdness and an interface that I just couldn't get my head around.
Sure, but I mean, I think they were the last ones that really got the mix of game and sim right. With Flying Corps, with Mig Alley, with Battle of Britain.
Yeah, oh, Mig Alley was fun.
Mig Alley was
I did enjoy Mig Alley.
Mig Alley is probably their finest work.
Yes. And you know, that game, other thing about Mig Alley was that there was a ground sim there.
Yeah.
As well. Like, you were actually plotting out the war, and then you would go fly the missions and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And they did that in Battle of Britain, too.
Yeah, no, their campaigns were fantastic. And what's interesting about that, coming back to space games, there are a couple games coming out now with dynamic campaigns in the works, which mm-hmm. blows my mind, because you can count the amount of space sims with dynamic campaigns on a hand and still have some fingers left over. You have Star Shatter, and you have XCOM Interceptor, believe it or not. I know. Terrible game.
God.
Terrible game. But it had the type of dynamic campaign that the other XCOM games had. But it's one of the only space sims that I know of, at least, with that kind of dynamic campaign. So now you have two games coming out, or at least in the works. One is called Rogue System, which, have you seen the Kickstarter?
I was looking at the Kickstarter for that. Yeah, that looks really good.
It looks really good. There's also Enemy Starfighter. Did you see that one?
Don't think I've seen that one. I saw the one where the guy was, maybe it's that one. He's got the green cockpit lighting and stuff, and the HUD that looks super nice. But he did the Kickstarter video where he talks for like 10 minutes about like his vision and his passion for all these games and stuff, and then he shows like the cockpit mock-up thing, and then he's doing the Switchology stuff like it's Falcon 4.
That's still Rogue System, I think.
No, that's not Rogue System. That's this other one.
Really.
Yeah, but this guy wants like $300,000.
That's Rogue System.
That's his Kickstarter goal.
That's Rogue,
is it?
Yeah, that is Rogue System, yes.
Oh, okay.
Enemy Starfighter. Right. Have you seen that game Flotilla?
Nope.
Well, it's kind of a tactical space game, but it's kind of got cel-shady graphics. Well, it's imagine kind of the tactical cel-shady thing, but when you make the mission, you zoom into a fighter. And that's what
cool.
What Enemy Starfighter is. And that kind of reminds me of the old MicroProse sims. Like, remember 1942 Pacific Air War? Did you ever play that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Remember the Admiral mode in that? Remember that? Or Total Air War, where you could just, you plot the game, you plot the mission, then you could jump into an F-22, or you could jump into a P-4. You know, that kind of thing. That's what Enemy Starfighter looks like, and they both...
You know what that puts me in mind of? Is Homeworld.
Mm.
You remember Homeworld?
Of course.
Yeah. That's you know, and I'll say this too: the guys that did the Battlestar Galactica, the new show, were some hardcore Homeworld players because they like lifted the music right from.
I'll be honest, the music is my favorite part of that game.
Yeah, it's just awesome. But the thing where you're talking about Enemy Starfighter, it makes me think of like when I would send starfighters out to die, and if I could have jumped into the cockpit of one of them.
That's what this kind of looks like.
Yeah, awesome.
And they both have dynamic campaigns. But so I think that's great because, you know, most space sims are heavily scripted, which, you know, the military ones, and I'm fine with that if they're a good story. Like, I mean, Free Space 2, for God's sakes, TIE Fighter. I mean, you have all these great scripted military sims. But, you know, why not have the Falcon 4 of space sims, which is what Rogue System kind of looks like it's going through, with Star Shatter.
Because making something that is an evolving campaign, not just where it just grabs random Lego bricks of a campaign and smacks it together, but something that actually evolves in a logical way depending on how the player performs or gives the illusion of it. You know, that's hard.
Yeah, it makes sense.
That's really hard to do. However, the people to learn the lesson from in that is the dudes that made IL-2 Sturmovik. I would kill for IL-2 in space.
Especially because, you know, here's the thing. I love certain bits about IL-2. Like, when they finally put dynamic campaigns in there, they were kind of cool. And the flight modeling is great, but the worlds were kind of empty. You know
there's not a whole lot of
like
non-mission related activity that's going
on. Like one thing I loved about Falcon and EF-2000 and Pacific Air War and some of those other sims is there was other stuff going on, and you could actually see that other stuff going on. You know,
Like, yeah, so it's like you're in a living environment.
Exactly.
Like
one of my
and it goes on regardless of whether you're there or not.
Exactly. Like one of my favorite dynamic campaigns besides Falcon 4.0, which I think is one of the best ones ever. Do you remember you remember Interactive Magic?
Oh yeah.
Remember the flight sims they did, F-22 and F-18? Remember those?
Yeah.
They had wonderful dynamic campaigns. They were called Talon, I believe. And they were just full of stuff going on. They just felt so living and dynamic.
Yeah.
And again, I would love to see that kind of thing going on in a space sim.
So what about like the X games? You know, X Beyond the Frontier and X the Terran Conflict, and
you know what?
Because those they seem to promise that.
Yeah, but you know what? To me at least, they have always felt like business simulators where your office just happens to be a spaceship. That's how they have felt to me. I mean, I've tried to get into them. I have one. I have to review Albion Prelude. I've had it for ages, but my last computer could barely run it, but I've upgraded since then, so now I can run it. So I have to play that one for a review. It's been over a year. I feel really bad. But but I'm honestly kind of not looking forward to it because those games have bored me. I'll be honest. I mean, I could see what they're trying to promise, but it's just never clicked with me. Maybe since I have to play this one for a review now, maybe it'll click with me. But those
because it seems like there's a lot of bookkeeping that has to go on. Like, but it's the thing of like where they promise is like, well, you can influence relations between two races, and you can get these guys to go to war with each other, if you know, or whatever, and then it's like make money by selling ships to both sides. You know?
Really?
So yeah, that kind of stuff. You know, it seems like you know, you can actually become a part of the economy, or you can choose to not play the economic game, and you can just run around and pick up missions and stuff and play it like it's Privateer. Which to me would be appealing. Give me let me have as much interaction into the what happens in the fabric of the game as I want to have. But if I just want to play like Privateer, like I'm Han Solo and I'm just smuggling cargo around and trying to do that without getting killed by pirates, yes, let me do that too. But maybe something that I'm doing in that I will see the effects of in the external world. You know, like if I'm running bombs for this one faction and I'm keeping them supplied and they go to war with somebody else, maybe that happened because I was doing something to influence that, you know. So but I don't have to necessarily jump in and be a direct combatant.
Exactly. No, that'd be great. So, and if the X Games offer that, you know, that'll be awesome to discover that. But I've never been able to discover that because I've gotten bored before I get that far in, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's why I don't know either. It's because, like, I watch their press kit stuff, and it's just like, oh, but that's like going to E3 and listening to Peter Molyneux, right? It's like he's going to promise the world. And it's like, you know, this is the all singing, all dancing, everything you ever wanted in a game. Oh, by the way, we take your magic cow away from you in the second level, and you don't get to see it again until the end of the game. Do you remember that game?
Is that Black and White are you talking about?
Yes.
He took my
cow, the bastard. I had a magic cow, and I spent like two levels training it for hours not to eat villagers, not to poop in or inappropriate places. And I thought this is going to be a magnificent, amazing game. And then the game became, oh, we've kidnapped your pet, and now you must do tedious things to get it back. And it was just like, oh my god, fuck you, game. I couldn't even believe it. So I'm still bitter. I don't know if
maybe
you can
that's
tell.
As far as I got. No, I feel the same way about, I think we talked about it earlier, Privateer. Because in Privateer, which you said you didn't play?
I didn't play it very much, no. I never got. Maybe you can help me. See, that's really my motivation for doing this podcast with you, is that maybe you can like be my mentor and get me over the hurdle that prevents me from enjoying these games that I so... It's like I'm terrible at the games, yet I'm an excellent fan of the games, right? It's just like I'm a football fan, but I can never get on the field, right? Because I'll get destroyed. So it's that kind of thing, you know. It's I learned my lesson one time whenever Nintendos were new, and I had this 4-year-old kid just absolutely destroy me at some games, and I was like, but wait, I love these games, and no amount of love can make you actually good. So.
But Privateer, so. It's like The amazing thing about Privateer is I spent all this time in the Wing Commander universe before that. Wing Commander 1, Wing Commander 2, whatever other. There was like Armada and Academy that might have come out before it or after it. I don't remember, but I spent time in those two. And so Privateer gave you like this open universe in the Wing Commander universe. So you'd run into Karathi every now and again and be like, oh my God, it's Karathi. But it really just refined the Elite formula so well. It made it. I mean, Elite was great, but it kind of bored me after a while because, like, this universe just feels kind of empty. But Privateer was just, it had so much, like, spice to it, it felt like. So I put at least 100 hours into that game. But the expansion, when you get to the, like, near the end of Privateer, you get this alien gun. And it's an amazing gun. It's the only way you can win the game because you have to shoot this super-powered alien. The only way you can kill it is with this gun. So once you kill it, once you finish the main quest, you can just fly around and keep doing missions and making money, but you have this amazing gun. So combat's like, screw you all!
So is it like the I win button? Like, kind of you fire one shot and you kill...
It wasn't that powerful. Maybe it was, I'm not remembering, but it was like two or three shots and like, boom. It was great. But when you got the Righteous Fire expansion, they take that gun away. It's just,
well, they had to, man.
They steal it.
They had
to level the
playing field.
I guess, but they stole it. And it's like, fuck. I worked so hard to get that gun. And I love that gun. And the character's like, my beautiful gun. Oh, my special gun. He's all pissed off, and I'm all pissed off. I'm like, oh, my God, my gun. And though I couldn't play anymore. I never did the Private Righteous Fire because I was like, they took my gun. And I was so angry. It's so bitter about it that I just had to stop playing. I was like, screw you people. And then when they released Privateer 2, I got even more mad. Cause,
oh, yeah, what, Privateer 2 was like an abomination, wasn't it?
It was a horrible abomination.
I just remember a lot of full-screen video, and it was just like not at all a Privateer game.
It had a great cast. I mean, Christopher Walken, John Hurt, Clive Owen. You know, it had
Walken was in that?
Oh, yeah.
I completely forgot that.
Oh, yeah, he was in it. It had a great cast, but the gameplay itself, total garbage.
How could it be bad with Walken?
Well, Walken, I'm actually a huge Walken fan, and the problem with Walken, he never says no. He grew up during the Depression, so he feels he should always be working. So he will never say no to just about anything. So if you ever want to see one of the best, worst things he's ever done, track down a movie called Puss in Boots.
Oh my God.
It's a live-action, hour-and-a-half version of the fairy tale where he plays Puss, and they're singing and dancing. That's why he loves this movie, because he loves to sing and dance.
Oh, God. Are there midgets?
There might be. But Sean Connery's son plays the main character.
Oh,
and
my God.
It's terrible. It's absolutely
terrible. My other show, right?
Yes. Yes. Your other. Yes. Go ahead and plug that right
coming,
now. You have a.
That's
have
coming.
A,
that's Yeah, it's badmoviepodcast.com. So that's going on the agenda. That is in the to-do list. I have to find that movie now. Holy crap.
It's on DVD. I think I own it. I don't. Another great bad movie he's done, McBain. Have you seen that one?
Oh, we did McBain. Okay. Yes. The best scene in McBain is whenever that fighter jet, like, Argentinian fighter jet flies up. he pulls out a revolver and shoots him through the cockpit window.
Past the other guy who's actually flying the plane, just right next to him, doesn't deafen him or blind him.
Oh,
or
that was amazing. Oh, yeah, it's just everything about that movie was a gem. And but, you know, it's weird. That's almost like a strange sequel to The Deer Hunter in a way.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're from Philly, so you have that relationship to Deer Hunter, right? So
I actually saw it until I moved out here, but it's in rural Pennsylvania. So, yeah, I know.
Right. Does it remind you of growing up in the 70s in Pennsylvania? It's
not
like,
really, because I grew up right outside of Philly, so it was much more urban.
So you weren't, like, in the steel town?
No,
kind of thing.
No. Okay. That was more west, and so I didn't really see that part of Pennsylvania until I was older.
Gotcha.
I get it, because I've been there, and wow, it's depressing. So I got it. But yeah, that was like the greatest cast in the space game was Privateer 2 with Walken and John Hurt and Clive Owen and a few other people I'm forgetting. But so the cast of that game, fabulous. The actual game, like what finally drove me off that game was like, you had jump points, but you couldn't jump to a place, you couldn't jump to your next jump point until all the enemies were killed. So you couldn't, like, run away if you got really hurt, you know? Like, in all these other games, if you get hurt, you can, like, oh, my God, I have to make the jump point and get away. And you can do that, right? But in Privateer 2, you can't do that because you have to kill everything before you can get away.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So it's like you're locked in the closet with the monsters. And
exactly. You're locked in the closet with a knife trying to stab them, and you can't leave until they're dead because they're blocking the door. And it just pissed me off so much.
Oh, speaking of knife fights, all right, this is a general problem that I have with Wing Commander 1 and 2 and Privateer, is the way that the flight modeling works, right, is they kind of...
Flight modeling.
Well, exactly.
No,
They come directly at you shooting, right?
Yeah, of
course. And if they're not coming directly at you, then they go directly away from you, and then they just rotate in space and come back at you again. And it's like, okay... I guess, but I'm trying to play Privateer and deal with that kind of combat, and then you've got, like, these two giant TV monitors, and you're trying to see space through a slit at the front, like in the first ship,
I believe that's what it was called, the Tarsus. I actually love that ship, because it's like, wow, I'm actually doing this because I'm flying like a beater. This must have been what the Millennium Falcon was before it got all gussied up. It was just beater like this, and it actually... added something in the game for me. It was like, ooh, I'm going to upgrade this eventually. It's going to be great.
Was that like a blessed event whenever you finally got those two giant screens out of your face?
You know what? That didn't bother me too much because, I don't know, I mean, most of those games had those big cockpits that got, like X-Wing, for example, had the cockpit. And if you turn the cockpit off, everything was just freaking useless. TIE Fighter was the same way. But the thing with TIE Fighters, you had this big window in front of you, so it was like, ooh, I can see. This is nice. but it didn't bother me that much at the time because I was kind of used to the, oh, there's just going to be a mat in front of me blocking part of my view. That's fine. As long as I can find them and eventually put them under a crosshair, I can deal with that. But I totally get what you're coming at because after, like, games that don't have cockpits anymore, and some people miss that. I'm fine with no cockpits, like in Free Space, but some people love cockpits. I don't know. But yeah, not, it would be probably a little annoying to go back to that after, like, Free Space, where you have this great field of view, and then you get into a Tarsus, I think it's what they're called, a little Tarsus with this little window and these big, huge, like, CRTs on the left and right. It's like, God damn it, I can only see a little bit. Where are you?
Well, have you seen the Privateer Reborn project?
Yeah,
that they did.
Yeah, I tried it. It was all right. It didn't.
Yeah, it's essentially the same game, right? I mean, are they missing anything, or do you get the same experience?
It didn't feel the same to me. You know, like, okay, I'm playing what is a good approximation of Privateer, but it was like, I guess the easiest way to say it was lacking some of its soul.
Yeah, I think because your monitor's too big now. You have to go back and play it on, like, a 14-inch CRT that's, like, fishbowl round. And
oh, man, I do plan on building one of those old PCs at one point. Once I have more room, I totally plan on building one with a CRT and everything.
Yeah, some of these games damn near demand it. Like, if you're going to – I mean, DOSBox goes a long way, but it doesn't go all the way. You know, and it's like sometimes you can't do it. Especially the one thing that's a real pain in the ass is 3DFX and games that were built for the Glide engine back then instead of DirectX and that. Because the Glide stuff, now I'll say this for Microsoft, they have done a beautiful job of backward compatibility, especially in Windows 7 and Windows 8.
Right.
I was shocked in Windows 8. It's actually better than 7, the backward compatibility.
I'll have to get it now.
Yeah. Don't do that to yourself on my account, though. But,
well, no, I'm playing all this old stuff, you know. If it has better backwards compatibility, you know.
Well, at least with the things that I have tried.
Right.
You know, it seems to do okay. Speaking of other old stuff, System Shock 2 just came out.
I know.
Over at Good Old Games.
I'm going to get it eventually.
Yeah, and it's, well, I got it. And then I ran the System Shock Rebirth thing that changes like the poly counts of the models and retextures them.
Yeah.
That, oh man, the game's hard to play without it. It's really hard. Like, you look at some of those, the mutant guys and stuff, and it's just like, my God, graphics were really that bad. It's like, I would have had sprites before some of the old 3D things that I see. But anyway, the guy like up polyed all the monster models and everything, so that's really good. And then another guy put out a pack that ups the textures for the environment.
Oh.
And that is really nice. So I'm playing this thing at like, I don't know what, like 1600 by whatever, you know, like an absurd resolution this game was never meant to be in, and it looks beautiful.
Mm.
It does not at all look super clunky. It looks like, I don't know, it would be a pretty passable, like, Xbox game or something, you know, like, because the Xbox stuff is, what, hardware from, like, 2005 or so.
Yeah.
It would look like a pretty low-poly Xbox game from maybe original Xbox Halo era kind of thing.
That's pretty good.
But it looks pretty good. So the mods and stuff, which are totally compatible with the good old games version, thank God. and they made it stable too, because I have it on CD and it crashes all the time if I try to run it. And I don't know what magic they did over there, but they made it actually stable.
Well, it's funny. This is a huge release for them, and they've released some other late era Windows games that had issues, like Interstate 76, for example, which has sadly never been fully resolved.
That had some bad problems. I love that game.
I do too.
On the MechWarrior 2 engine, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
but System Shock is such a, and I love good old games. They're one of my favorite. They're my favorite digital distributor. But that's a huge release for them. So you'd think they'd put a lot of work in it, because if they got it wrong, they'd never hear the end of that.
Yep. It's that, this game, Baldur's Gate 2, and Planescape Torment are probably my three most favorite things I've ever got from them.
Oh, with me, of course, all the Wing Commander games. And, of course, when they got Starflight 1 and 2, I nearly lost it. I was so happy.
How did that turn out? Because I haven't played their version of it, but I saw there's a fan remake of it that somebody did that looks pretty good.
There are a few, actually. Few fan remakes. The problem with Starflight, and this is what I tell everyone who wants to play it for the first time, it's insanely archaic, the interface, and also the graphics. Insanely archaic. It's keyboard only. You can play with one hand, but you can play with one hand. It's basically all you need is like the numeric keypad and the enter key. That is all you need. And
wow.
It's very archaic. I tell people if they can to track down maybe the Amiga version, because it's prettier. Or if they want to go a little crazier, track down the Sega Genesis version, because it's prettier, and landing on planets is actually done manually, so it's kind of cooler. Because you actually
don't need.
Yeah, the first time I played the Genesis version, because in the DOS version, you like pick a spot to land and your thing just lands you there, and then you get out of your ship. But the first time I played the Genesis version, I like, okay, this is where I want to land, and then my ship just bounces, crash. I'm like, what the hell just happened? Oh, I got to land it myself? Damn, man. But, you know, that was kind of cool. I was like, well, that's a little more interactive. I like that. But, yeah, I usually tell people if they can to track down the Genesis version, because it's probably the best version of Starflight.
I was unaware it was even on console.
I know, right?
So that's...
I know, it's crazy. But, yeah, the Genesis or the Amiga versions, because the DOS version... it's kind of a tough sell because, again, the graphics are very rudimentary and the interface is very archaic. But if you can get past that, it's got still some of the best exploration/discovery gameplay in any space game I've played.
See, maybe that's a topic, a rabbit hole to go down on another night, because it's pretty deep, is the schism between quality of gameplay and the mechanics of the game, right? Versus the presentation.
Yeah.
Because back in the day, there was no presentation, right? It's like, it was like Rogue had the best graphics, and it was ASCII. So when we finally got graphics, they were kind of shit graphics,
yeah.
But we were so used to imagining these things in our head You know, so a game like Starflight, to whenever you would go and land on that planet and it had like those hideous polygons that would, you know, like zoom up at you, you know, in terrible, like, 2 frames a second motion.
That was immersion at the time, man.
I know. It was crazy. It was like, oh, my God.
Woo, I'm actually flying down there. Whee! Yeah. That's how it felt.
Yeah. And then, so, like, Starflight 2, they might have actually put a tree on the landscape or something. And
no, they
like, oh, my God, it's a revolution.
A tiny bit. That's all I remember. But yeah, trees or anything.
Yeah, I remember it was like, did they even in Gunship 2, were there even trees? That was just like flying over a flat green Tron grid.
Gunship 2000, yes, I think there were some.
Okay.
But if I recall, they still had problems putting trees into Longbow 2. I think that was a big point of contention for them, was actually getting trees in there.
Yeah, I wish that I could get Longbow 2 to run.
I haven't tried.
People have done it.
Really?
People have done it, but yeah. But I was thinking about, like, I wish I had my CD of Longbow 1, because it didn't use 3D acceleration, and I know I could get it running in DOSBox.
Probably.
But I don't have my DVD anymore, CD anymore. And strangely, nobody has put that up on a torrent. So if you're listening to this, you know what to do.
While we do not officially condone that sort of behavior, sometimes it's the only way to get stuff. So
yeah, none of the abandonware sites seem to have it. They're really, I don't know if there was a thing with whoever owns Origin Jane's stuff now. I guess it would be still EA, right? And there,
I think so.
Because it was EA, because it was Jane's, which was under Origin, which is under EA.
Yeah.
Anyway, I guess they're being really tight with that, with people not putting it up on abandonware sites or something, because you just can't find it out there.
They should throw them up on Good Old Games. I mean, they've already got
hell yes.
They've already got some amazing flight sims on there. They've got they've got a couple of what do they have? They have Apache Longbow and Comanche Hokum, which are fantastic.
And Hind.
And oh God, and Apache. The Predator.
Yeah.
They have that too. Now if they could only get like Tornado on there.
Tornado was good
and
time.
TFX and EF2000 and some of those classic sims. I think they would sell, man.
You know? Definitely. If you guarantee me that it's going to run, all right, then I'll buy it. But it's a lot of it I've pulled from abandonware sites, and then you end up spending, like, you lose 24 to 48 hours fiddling with it, just trying to get it to run not in a postage stamp.
Yeah.
And, now that's why I'm really happy that you hooked me up with that DOSBox loader thing, because that makes tweaking the config file.
Oh, God, yes. So much easier. Yeah, and you can have different configs for each game, which make it even better.
Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah, I love that program. I tried, there's another one I tried, Defend Reloaded or something, but that was nowhere near as intuitive as DOSBox game loader. So I'm really happy I found that. Cause
that's a different show.
That's a very different show.
Fappy Trail.
Oh.
But anyways, I think there's a thing where graphics, okay, if you remember, like, CG in movies, mm-hmm. right? So there's these movies that were crappy old horror movies or whatever. But I don't know. Let's take, like, the Alien movies, right? Like Aliens. So they Stan Winston, and they did these practical effects, and they were fabulous. Mm-hmm. And you can look at those movies today, and they look absolutely as convincing as they did then,
exactly.
right?
Yeah.
Because the animatronics or whatever kind of puppet wizardry and miniatures that they did mm-hmm. looks good, and it held up. But anything that had CG back then basically looks like shitty CG from a Sci-Fi Channel movie today.
Well, that's the same thing with early 3D accelerated games. Like, they looked like, back in the day, they looked amazing, but now it's like, oh, like,
yep.
There's a game by Psygnosis called Shipwrecked. Do you remember that one? It was kind of you played like a ship, and you had to go around and shoot, like, towns and stuff. And it was an early 3D accelerated game, and it was a lot of fun. And I got nostalgic for it a year or so ago, so I looked it up, and I was like, oh, I'm not a graphics whore, but I don't know. Oh, wow, man. Because, like, 2D games, they still hold up. And certain older 3D games, like, I think after you got a certain point, like 90, 98 or 99, that's when they start still holding up, like the late Flight Sims and some of the later Space Sims, like the 3DFX version of Independence War still looks great. But you get before that with some of the early 3D stuff, and you're like, oh, I don't know, man, I know.
Yeah. Exactly. Or they had that, like, that weird hybrid 3D where it was like some things were 3D and some things were sprites. Like that, like your bullets were. What was that? What was that? That game. It was like Descent, but it was like free roaming on the surface world. It was Terminal Velocity.
Microsoft copied it and called it Fury 3 and included it with some graphics cards. Terrible game.
Those guys actually went on to do. There was a flight sim that competed against Microsoft's flight simulator.
Flight Unlimited?
Yeah, Flight Unlimited. Yep. I actually met those guys when we were at E3 in 2000 and didn't know each other.
That was Looking Glass.
Yeah, those guys from Terminal Velocity actually got hired by Looking Glass.
Really?
To do that game. Yeah, and I was like, remember in the trailers in the Godlot, they had those silver bullet trailers? They were set up in one over there. They had like a little flight.
I remember. Because I was covering, that was my thing back then. I primarily covered flight sims. Little did I know that they were on their way out. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Oh, God.
Well, I told you my story about how I single-handedly killed them, right?
Yeah, so. You did not. But
I single-handedly killed flight sims with my reviews. But. Yeah, I was specializing on helicopter sims. So if you think like flight sims went away with a whimper, helicopter sims went away with a bang.
What was the last one? The last one I think for a while was Comanche Hell'em, wasn't it? Wasn't that the last for a while?
Yeah, that was like the swan song for the longest time. Have you seen the mod stuff that people have done to that?
Oh, it's amazing.
Thing?
It's amazing what they've done with those. Yeah.
It's just crazy. Like how the hell can they do that, cuz they're poking it. They don't have source code. They're just poking at it with a hex editor and seeing what happens.
Oh, they don't have the source code for those?
No. Yeah. They didn't have the source. They're just like bolting on files and doing all kinds of weird stuff. They added like a new campaign in the Arctic. Track IR head tracking in the thing.
When they first released them on GOG, I bought them both and I downloaded all that stuff. I was like, "My God."
Yeah. It's nuts. I wish GOG would actually pack some of those, like, those heavy hitter mods in just as optional thing. Like, just give me another subdirectory and just put the mods right with it.
I don't know if
don't make me go fish.
I don't know if they can legally do that.
Yeah, well, they can't sell it, but, well, I guess that would constitute selling the mod.
Yeah. So maybe, like, include links to them on the game page or something.
Yeah, like, put a big readme, like, right in the...
Yeah, readme with all these links. Like, you want this, and you want this.
Yeah.
Okay. So next week, why don't next week we talk about that topic you just brought up?
What about the
interface?
Okay.
That's a great idea. Because
I think honestly, back when we used to have to imagine more, like on an Atari 2600, right?
Mm.
You'd be playing Adventure, and the dragon that looks like a rubber duck would come out and chase you.
But it was a dragon; it scared the crap out of you.
I know, right? And that exactly. And that 2x4 with a point—that was a sword, and you know, and all that.
Bleep, I'm hitting something. Blip, blip, blip. Yes, exactly.
but it's the thing of like. I don't know if it's because we had better imaginations because we were kids, or we had better imaginations just because that was as good as it got.
Well, I think
you still had to.
We were more forgiving because that's all they could do. So we understood.
And I think I'm kind of going through like a renaissance of that with looking at TIE Fighter. And once I'm playing TIE Fighter, it's like, hooray, I finally got this going. And you would think, like, I should be just, like, kissing that game's ass for finally working, you know? And it's like, I'm going to just play you and love you, and I bought a joystick just to play. And then it's just like, oh, wait, I got this one working, and then my ADD kicks in. What other games can I get working? And that's where I lost the last 48 hours. It's like, I got TIE Fighter working. Sweet. Let's go for X-Wing. Sweet. Let's go for the Collector's Edition. Sweet. Hey, Wing Commander. You know, I wonder what old Flight Sims. Hey, I could get Strike Commander running. Was it Strike Commander?
Of course I remember Strike Commander.
Oh, that game was awesome.
I played the crap out of that. Because it was like Wing Commander, but with an F-16. It was like, ooh.
Yeah. It's like, I could play Falcon 3, or I could play Strike Commander. And Strike Commander was awesome. So
yeah, I mean, Falcon 3 was awesome too, but Strike Commander I think was doubly awesome.
Yeah, well, I remember like the speaking of graphics again, in Falcon 3, right? So you had the cockpit simulation and everything,
yeah.
And I think honestly that was Falcon 3 was the flight sim that hit the top of my understanding curve, where I would say that I actually mastered that game. I absolutely understood everything that was going on. I had all the keyboard. Do you remember when games used to come with a keyboard layout chart?
Sure.
Pulled out.
Absolutely. Right. I still have a copy of Mega Fortress in the box. And
Wow, I love Mega Fortress.
Hell yeah. And it has that, and I was just looking at it like, wow, I remember this stuff. Like
some of those things were like rolling out the red carpet. The thing was like forever long. It's like, oh my god, so many keys. So
oh god.
Yeah, so it was like in Falcon, Falcon 3, I have to specify that, because Falcon 4 is a whole nother animal.
Oh, totally.
But Falcon 3, it was like I actually had a full end-to-end understanding and mastery of that game. So then it was just like I stopped the tutorial phase, and then I went into, like, now I can stop learning how to play the game, and I actually move on to kicking ass in the game because I know what I'm doing.
Well, yeah.
And I haven't had a flight sim since that, other than maybe F-15, that I felt like I actually got my head all the way around everything that you could do.
Well, I think Falcon 3 and its expansions had that it had a better balance between game and sim. Plus, I think as much as I love the manual for Falcon 4, I think it was a bit too much, especially for a lot of more average sim players. But the manuals for Falcon 3, they were just perfect. Because they were...
Yeah, old people and children could injure themselves trying to pick up the Falcon 4 manual.
I kind of almost did the other day when I was going through my...
You get a herniated disc.
Yeah. It's like, oh, God, get the forklift. But the Falcon 3 manuals, they're written by the same guy, Pete Bonanni. Remember him? He did the Art of the Kill videos that came with Falcon 3.
Yeah, I remember that was actually packed in on the DVD.
Exactly.
That was awesome.
Oh, God, yeah. But I think with the fourth one, they went a little too far, which I can understand that. They're enthusiastic.
Well, they went too far for themselves.
Yeah.
Because that game didn't actually work until about 10 years later.
Yeah. I don't even have that version. I just still have the original.
Well, there's a project where they open sourced it finally, and it's called Free Falcon.
Oh.
And it's Falcon 4 all patched up and beautiful.
Ooh.
I used to fly that back in 2005, I think. But it was actually my buddy Eddie, who he used to work for Atari Cryptic, and he works for Kabam now. But his wife at the time was awesome, building an F-16 cockpit in the bedroom.
In the
right.
Whoa.
Like, they had a spare bedroom, and she's building a full-size 1-to-1 F-16 cockpit in the spare bedroom.
Oh my god.
And she had the joysticks. Like, she went through several iterations of like hot ass, you know, the Thrustmaster stick and throttle.
Yeah.
And then that had to go, and then she ended up with there was the last iteration. It was the Cougar that they had, right, where you could like unbolt the stick off, and it was interchangeable.
Yeah.
With different ones. And then as if the $500 joystick is not good enough, then they had another guy that you could send the stick off to, and he would dismantle it, and then it was no longer gears and springs. They would actually do like where it would sense just tension on the stick. I forget what that system's called, but it was just like a plate. And then it could sense how much pressure you were putting on the stick, which is actually what's really in some of the planes, right? So it's like it evolved to that with like a big screen TV bolted to the front of it. And and this whole thing, like a PC embedded in it. And yeah, it was rocket. So she was very, very serious about her flight sims, and she built a like a 3/4 size Fokker biplane in her garage.
God.
Yeah, there's pictures of that if you go up to like Sim Pits or Viper Pits or whatever .com and search for that. She's got pictures of her plane that she built in the garage. It was funny. They had one picture where they were testing it. They were in a suburban Ohio neighborhood, like outside of Columbus, and they had the plane hooked up to the bumper of the car, and they were testing the motor on the plane, and they had to tie the plane down to the car to keep it from trying to take off. Right.
Oh,
and I would have hated to have been the neighbor across the street when they're spinning this plane up. You know, like that's coming to my living room, right?
Right.
So, yeah, pretty awesome. But anyway, yeah, I've just had the privilege to meet some pretty extraordinary individuals.
That is pretty awesome. So, why don't we start wrapping this up? Because I think we've been talking a while, and I don't want to bore folks. I don't know if we can.
So, hey, that's why they make next week,
right? That's right. We should do this so, at least semi-regularly. We'll see how we can fit it into our schedule. I know I can probably do it weekly. But we'll talk about it. But folks out there, hopefully listening to this, I just want to thank you for tuning in. My name is Brian. This is Jim. And you've been a lot of fun to talk to. This is going to be very entertaining. I think we're going to have to work. I think our biggest problem, maybe not problem, but biggest issue might be our focus.
Yeah. But we don't have a topic.
We don't have a topic this week, like, but wow, man, we've been everywhere. It's been great. But yeah, once we have a topic, that'll definitely, I think, focus us.
Yep. So I don't know. That it's kind of dangerous if we talk about the graphics stuff in games like as an official topic next week without narrowing it down to a focus of a few games. Maybe that's like our homework between now and like next Tuesday, is we'll figure out which games and which examples, because otherwise we could do a 5-hour show.
Mm. Okay. We will talk about it. We will definitely talk about it. But folks, I want to thank you all for joining us on this. We're going to call this episode zero. It's going to be the outbreak monkey of podcasts. And we're going to call this episode zero, the introduction. And we're just going to take it from here. And it's going to be a journey that I hope you all join us on. So thank you so much.
Yeah. So do you have forums on the site?
I do.
Or
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they can come and harass you on the forum.
Yeah. I guess we could have comments on the actual post for the podcast. Plus, I can create a podcast specific forum. Mm-hmm. Talk about.
And then of course, if they want to bother us in public, we're over at brokenforum.com.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. And then what email address do you want to use for feedback for the show?
Oh, God, I need to create one.
Well, just make one, and we'll announce it next week.
Okay, yeah, I'll make one. It'll probably be like feedback@spacegamejunkie.com or something like that. But yeah, I'll make one. I didn't even think of that. Darn.
Okay, awesome.
I'm so ill-prepared.
Well, that's what episode zero is for. Now we know what we need.
That's right. Okay, I'm going to put note down for that. All right. Thank you, everyone, and thank you, Jim.
All right, groovy. Thanks, man. See you next week.
See ya.